Clarence McCartney, for many years, was the senior pastor of the First Presbyterian Church in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He was quite a student of history, especially the Civil War, and he loved to speak also of that era of the great divines, the old Puritan divines, and enjoyed telling the story on a number of occasions of the disciplined and rather dogmatic ministry of this particular Puritan, as he brought a series of full week's messages in a particular church. And it so happened that a woman who was somewhat noted for her sharp and vicious tongue attended those meetings and wreaked a bit of havoc through the week as his ministry hit home, and I'm sure brought conviction to her life. And she decided the last night, as he finished his final message, she would speak to him. She said to him, "Your robe is entirely too long, and it has annoyed me all week long. And I brought some shears, and I would like to shorten it." He quietly disrobed and gave her his robe, and she quickly cut off a few inches. And when she finished, he said, "And now, my good woman, there's something about you that is entirely too long, and it has annoyed me all week long. With your permission, I would like to shorten it." She frowned and reluctantly handed over the shears. He said, "Now, stick out your tongue." We would all wish that an uncontrolled tongue could be solved by a little snippet here and there. You will live to see the day that you regret something you have said. You have already lived that long and have already done that, but when you do it in a pulpit, or when you do it in a counseling session, or when you do it in a group of friends and it comes back to haunt you, you will regret it all the more. Will Norris was a witty American journalist, had a way of putting something of a profound statement into simple, earthy terms that could be remembered. On one occasion, he wrote this: "If your lips would keep from slips, five things observe with care. To whom you speak, of whom you speak, and how, and when, and where." Would that I had remembered that all throughout my more than 35 years of ministry. To whom you speak, of whom you speak, and how, and when, and where. As we learned yesterday from James chapter 3, out of the same mouth come both blessings and cursings, followed by the reproof, "My brothers, these things ought not so to be." A sharp and vicious tongue is certainly not limited to the woman in the congregation or to just a particular group of individuals who run together. Cynthia and I found that it was beneficial for us not long after we had gotten to the Fullerton ministry that a particular gathering every Sunday evening was not a good thing for us to be a part of. We realized that while we were invited and they desired our presence, we found that it became little more than a session where people were sort of worked over in the group, and that was not good for us. We have enough battle controlling our tongues without running with people who chose not to do that. Well, we're thinking about the tongue, but really we're talking about the heart, aren't we? Jesus, Luke chapter 6, please turn, verse 45, teaches very clearly that it is not a matter of the tongue as much as it is a matter of the heart, the mind, the inner person. He puts it very clearly and succinctly. The good man, Luke 6:45, out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth what is good. Bringing forth is the sounding forth in words, is the living out in the life. But notice it's from the good treasure of his heart that good comes. And the contrast, the evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth what is evil. For his mouth speaks from, literally the text reads, the abundance which fills the heart. We talked yesterday of a simple little analogy of the bucket and the well. The tongue is like the bucket, and the heart is like the well, and it dips into the well, and out come those things that defile the individual. Out of the abundance of that which fills the heart, the mouth speaks. Now, in a oversimplified manner and in not too great homiletical style, I would like to take us back to the book of Proverbs as it addresses the mouth, the tongue, the lips. I did a serious study in Proverbs a number of years ago and found that the tongue, the mouth, the lips, and words, those terms, appear almost 150 times in the English text. That means on an average of just under 5 times a chapter. In these 31 chapters, Solomon, or whoever may be writing the proverb, has something to say about the use of the tongue. We could base our thoughts on one verse in Proverbs. That's chapter 15 and verse 2, if you'd turn there to start with. And then we will just sort of move through the proverbs and show from an illustration of various proverbs both the good and the evil, the right and the wrong uses of the tongue. 15 verse 2. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. Observe the simple contrast. The wise, the fool. Look also at 18:21, same or a similar contrast. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Eloquent way to put that, isn't it? Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Let's start with a positive and end with a negative. Let's illustrate from the book of Proverbs the right uses of the tongue, and I want to suggest 4 of them by categories in the book of Proverbs, and then look at 4 categories of the wrong uses of the tongue, understanding all along that we are all susceptible. You never come to the place where you have this organ completely conquered. No one can tame the tongue, says James. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. It can poison an office where you work. It can poison a church where you serve. It can poison a study group that you're a part of. It can ruin a marriage that you have committed yourself to. The poison of asps rests under the tongue of the unredeemed, and it seems as though that's one of the last parts of us that truly gets saved. The right uses of the tongue. I want to start with the category of wise counsel and sound advice. You may want to write down these categories and some of the references. You may need that sometime in the future. Wise counsel and sound advice. Look at Proverbs chapter 10, verse 31. Again, a contrast. The mouth of the righteous flows with wisdom. The mouth of the righteous flows with wisdom. He mentions also the perverted tongue. 32, the lips of the righteous bring forth what is acceptable. From the righteous mouth flows wisdom and that which is acceptable. Look at 15 verse 7 as we sort of move back and forth through Proverbs. 15:7, the lips of the wise spread knowledge. The hearts of fools are not so. Verse 22 of that chapter, without consultation, plans are frustrated, but with many counselors, they succeed. I have never made a serious and important decision in my life that would have to do with something important regarding my future without seeking the counsel of those wiser than I. And invariably, I have looked back with gratitude. Invariably, this individual or these people will bring up something I would not have thought of, or a blind spot in my own thinking that was blocked for some reason. And this is usually addressed by a wise counselor, someone with sound advice. 19 and verse 20 of the Proverbs, please. Listen to to counsel and accept discipline that you may be wise the rest of your days. It is of inestimable value. I was engaged in a ministry for about 4 years in Irving. And when an opportunity came for me to move after we had built a new building and our congregation had enlarged and there was nothing but blessing resting upon that ministry, I was faced with a tough decision. Didn't want to go, didn't feel I should think about it, but I couldn't get it out of my mind. I wasn't even restless about where I was. And I sought the counsel of Dr. Richard Sumi, a man some of you may know, but and certainly all of us on the platform will remember, a man who served as chaplain of the seminary for a number of years, following many very significant years in a pastorate, both in Richmond, Virginia, and in Wheaton, Illinois. My time with him proved to be a turning point in that decision. His counsel was wise. His advice was sound. He had nothing to lose and nothing to gain by talking straight with me and asking hard questions about that decision. I was grateful for years to follow, and to this day, looking back, still grateful for the wise words he gave. And he put it in terms that I would never have thought of. How grateful we are for the wise counsel and the capable tongue of the righteous. Seek the counsel of those older than you and more experienced than you, especially when facing tough decisions. Here's another, and it would be what I will call reproof, rebuke, and exhortation. Look at 15:5 of Proverbs. A fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is prudent. Reproof comes in the form of words, often words given, hopefully given in private, where someone cares enough about you to pull you aside and to give you a tip, or to correct an action, or to redirect a direction of your life that needs to be redirected. It says, he who regards such reproof is prudent. Same chapter, verse 31. He whose ear listens to the life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. He who neglects discipline despises himself. He who listens to reproof acquires understanding. Interesting way to put that, isn't it? Reproof, rebuke, and a spiritual exhortation come from the tongue of the wise. Look at 17, verse 10. A rebuke goes deeper into one who has understanding than 100 blows into a fool. You can punch a fool's lights out, and he still won't get it. He's thick. He's unteachable. He's out of touch with his own needs. And all the blows in the world will not turn him around, but there's something wonderful about one who has understanding. A rebuke lands hard and permanently stays etched in the mind. I hope you have, throughout your ministry, a few individuals who love you enough to tell you the truth. Ideally, they will do it in love, As I said earlier, they will do it in private. They care for your soul, and they don't want you to miss the best. Think of a reproof from someone who is godly as an individual who loves you enough to lead you correctly. I find that pastors need to open themselves up to that. Now, there will always be some who feel they are that for you. That's another category, and you don't need much of that. You'll get a lot of that involuntarily. What you want are those who, with reluctance, and I might add, with care and wisdom, love you enough to pull you aside, put an arm around your shoulder, and whisper a few comments from time to time when you need to hear them. 27:6 comes to mind in Proverbs. It's a verse all of us would do well to commit to memory. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. It's in the causative stem in the Hebrew. Faithful are the bruises caused by the wounding of one who loves you, would be a fair paraphrase. Faithful are the bruises caused by the wounding of one who loves you. The one doing the wounding, please observe, loves the one being reproved. He takes little delight in it, but because he or she has your good at heart, they will do that. The bruise left lingers on, even after the blow has struck. And I might add, solid friendships justify loving criticism. I'm not referring to sarcasm. That's probably the lowest form of criticism, insult, sarcasm. That helps no one. While we're over here in the 20s, look at 25, 11, and 12. I love the way this is written. It said, the eloquence of it is easily remembered, like apples of gold in settings of silver. That eloquent, like apples of gold in settings of silver, is a word spoken in right circumstances. Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold. And look at this last line. Is a wise reprover to a listening ear. When you graduate from seminary and you move into a pastoral role or some leadership role or some ministry in a mission organization or in a parachurch ministry, wherever it is God leads you, be sure that you remain accountable, that you cultivate a sense of caring, confidential accountability, same-sex group, small in number, with whom you meet regularly. Your schedule may permit a once-a-week meeting. It may have to be once every other week, but you commit yourself to being accessible to and willing to listen to this group. It's not a group you meet with to teach. You usually learn in gatherings like that more than you teach. And it isn't just for your benefit, it's for their benefit as well. So as a wise reprover on an obedient ear, reproof, rebuke, and exhortation. Here's a third category of good that comes from the tongue. It's what I would call encouragement and affirmation. We never seem to get enough of that. Chapter 15, verse 4, encouragement and affirmation. A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. 15:23, a man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. I have a friend who received a simple little note from me that I had written to thank him, and he said, I can live in that like Elijah lived in the catered meal. I can go in the strength of that 40 days and 40 nights. A simple little note. I have been in homes where a letter I've written or just, half-page note written hurriedly, is framed and hung on a wall. And I usually check to see if the spelling was correct when I wrote that, or if I measured my words. I had no idea it would even be kept. I thought they'd read it and take it for what I, the reason I sent it, and toss it. But the encouraging words and words of affirmation fall on hungry ears and needed hearts. In ministry, think of yourself mainly as an encourager. You are encouraging the sheep as you lead them. You are affirming God's hand in their lives. There will be times of rebuke and reproof, and faithful are those who carry that out. But it isn't just that. We lead sheep. We don't drive them. We encourage them to find quiet waters. It's terribly important that our tongues be used for encouragement. And not just the flock. Our family members. Just between you and me for a moment. When was the last word of deliberate encouragement you gave your mate? I mean, with no plans in mind, no strings attached, no hope for a great spaghetti meal tonight, no desire for anything other than thank you. Or I observed this about you recently. Or with one of your children. We have grandchildren living with us these days as our younger son has moved from Brentwood, Tennessee to live with us. They're thinking about building a home in this area, and in the meantime, they're living with us. And we love it. We have a little almost one-year-old and an almost five-year-old. And usually Noah, the five-year-old, and I have a little breakfast together, a little bowl of cereal. And it's great to get the wisdom of a five-year-old before I come to seminary. And I was on my way out the door this morning, true story, and that little red-headed Noah looked at me, had his hands stuffed in his little pockets. He sleeps in these little workout outfit, his hands stuffed in his pocket like he's some coach or something. He said, "Remember, Bubba, watch what you say today." I said, "Okay, all right." His mom and dad are teaching him to watch what he says. He tends to beat up on his sister, and that's not good. And she messes with his toys, and he doesn't like that. And he tends to unload on her, a truck of stuff. And they watch what you say. So he decided he'd pass that on to me, to watch what you say. How great it is in our living close to one another that we take the time to encourage one another. And for profs to encourage those who are in your class, to tell them they'll make it. You can make it. I mean, this place is full of 74, soon to be 75 years of memories of people who made it through. And right about now, you're not sure that you're going to be one of them. You will make it. It may take another year or so, but you will make it. You'll get through. And it's amazing what encouragement does when it comes from someone who means something to another. You will have a secretary someday. Encourage her or him with a word of reassurance. Thank them for a job well done. Thank them for a carefully written letter, for their counsel at certain times. Your elders, your board, your physician, your parent, your attorney. Someday you may even have a gardener that keeps your yard. You say, "Man, I am the gardener." That's not ever going to happen. Someday you may have somebody that keeps your... Encourage them. Thank them. Someone who works on your car. On and on the list goes. I think doors are open to share Christ once we have laid the groundwork through affirmation and words of appreciation. We're going to see in just a minute, I do not have in mind flattery. Nothing that you share in affirmation should be smoke blowing in nature. That's what the term they use in Texas. blowing a little smoke on you right now. That's not what I have in mind. Whatever you share of encouragement should be absolutely true. And I would say it best be done in private, lest it appear to be flattery or just patting the right backs. One final comment on the positive uses, and that's teaching and comforting. Teaching and comforting. You're in chapter 15. Look at chapter 18, verse 4. The words of a man's mouth are deep waters. The fountain of wisdom is a bubbling brook. I remember sitting in classrooms at seminary thinking, we will never plumb the depths of this prof's knowledge. It is amazing how deep that bubbling brook is. Question after question after question from various ones in the class, and calmly and graciously the prof listens and answers the questions and brings teaching and comfort to the lives of the students. Go back to 13 and verse 14. Still talking about teaching and comforting. 13 and verses 14 and 15. The teaching of the wise is a fountain of life. To turn aside from the snares of death. Good understanding produces favor, but the way of the treacherous is hard. Our married daughter, Colleen, and her husband, Mark, are involved with us in our new church startup. And because of that, she's and he are living in the area now. And both of them are students at the seminary, albeit a few courses, but they're underway. He wants to ultimately pursue a PhD, and she's in a master's program, and she called me last night at 10 after 10. She's on her way home, and she says, Daddy, I just finished this great class, and she named the prof. She said they sort of worked together in this class, and one of them was one of my profs who happened to have been dressed up like a convict in the class that he had taught that evening, and she said, he looks pretty good in stripes, you know. And she said, but I got to tell you, Daddy, this teaching has changed my life. It's the response of a young woman in her mid-30s, three children, busily engaged in rearing them, who comes to class at night and drives home, finding her life being changed by the teaching of someone. Nothing that thrills me like that. Someday you will be the teacher. You will be the pastor that brings encouragement and causes a phone call to be made to somebody's dad. Someday you will be the fountain of knowledge. A little frightening thought right now, isn't it? But someday you will be the bubbling brook that will pour forth information that will change a life. Why do you think these women and men do this sort of thing for a living? It's that kind of information that fuels their fire. It's a love for the classroom and for those who are drinking it in and absorbing it and will someday hopefully model it and share it. The power of the tongue, the amazing ability of a person to stand and teach and deliver the goods. It's wonderful. And it still changes lives. And it always will. Because it's the Word of God that is alive and active and sharp, like a double-edged sword, razor sharp, that cuts beyond what any surgeon's scalpel can ever touch, the soul and the spirit. The use of the tongue, how magnificent when under the control of the Spirit of God. And then there are the other categories. We'll just touch on them, lest you dwell on them longer than you do the former. First is what I would call, under the wrong uses of the tongue, deceitful flattery. We just saw in 27:6, deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Isn't that a good way to put it? Deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. If you've ever been kissed by an enemy with deceptive words, you know without my developing that, what that does to you. If you've ever been guilty of doing that, you know the consequences that follow. Deceitful flattery. And by this I mean insincere compliments expressed for the purpose of gaining favor in the eyes of another. Excessive praise spoken with hidden and often impure motives. That's flattery. Finding out what someone is giving and then coddling that individual because they give a lot. Finding out someone is rather influential and then you decide to shake that hand a little more often so you can gain from the benefit of that. That'll bite you every time. That's not of God. Deceitful flattery. 26:28 addresses the same. A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. Stay away from deceitful flattery. You'll be tempted over and over in whatever ministry pursuit you're involved in to play up to certain individuals. Do your best as the pastor of the church, as the minister serving, to keep away from the details of what someone gives by way of financial donations. Obviously, God is using some in greater ways than others, but that's not a cause for you to turn to flattery for what you may gain. Here's a second. You expect me to mention this. Slander, tale-bearing, and gossip. The whole idea of destructive criticism. Look at 10, verse 18. 10, 18. He who conceals hatred has lying lips. He who spreads slander is a fool. Scripture condemns flattery, and criticism and slander and gossip. So many other verses. Someone said, tale bearers are as bad as tale makers. You hear a tale, stop it. It'll stop with you. Certainly your part in it. It just occurs to me to move from Proverbs right here for a moment to Ephesians chapter 4. Some of you know immediately the verse I have in mind. It's verse 29. Ephesians 4, 29. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. I remember one year Cynthia chose that verse as the verse to put by all of our telephones. She typed it up on a 3x5 card and she just put it right there on the phone. We had a house full at that time of 3 teenagers, one on his way. We were busily engaged in a number of activities, 3 cars in the driveway, going, full bore. And we did a lot of stuff we did on the phone. And she chose to put this verse on the phone, by the phone. Let no unwholesome word, the word means putrid, rotten, used for old meat or old rotting vegetables. Let no putrid word proceed from your mouth, only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. Well, that's a great verse to tape to your telephone every new year. That it may give grace to those who hear. Speaking of the telephone, this is a great chance for me to throw this in for no extra charge. Telephone etiquette is really important. How you sound on the phone, how you answer the phone. Some of you answer the phone like a cadaver. Oh, is that hello or is that oh? What is that? Oh, a little pleasant tone is great. An uplifting word. And be careful how you use the machine in your home. I'm so sick of talking to machines I could puke. I call individuals, hello, we're not able to come to the phone right now. And then I listen through 30 seconds of that. And then I say, oh, okay, this is Chuck Swindoll. Oh, hi. Oh, I thought you weren't able to come to the phone right now. Well, you know, we have that kind of screen to calls. Think about that. Just think about it. What if God had a machine? Hello. I appreciate your coming with that confession, but pretty busy right now, and we're able to take it. We'll let you know. We'll call you back. Be careful how you use a telephone. It's a marvelous medium of communication, but it really can be abused. A lot more I could say. Criticism. I love Paul Tournier's words from his book, Guilt and Grace. Listen, some of you can identify with this. In all fields, even those of culture and art, other people's judgment exercises a paralyzing effect. Fear of criticism kills spontaneity. It prevents us from showing ourselves and expressing ourselves freely as we are. Courage is needed to paint a picture, to write a book, to erect a building designed along new architectural lines, or to formulate an independent opinion or an original idea. Be careful about shooting down somebody's original idea before they have a chance to get it out of their face. Let them work it out. Criticism comes often in a quick snipe. Ah, that'll never work. We can't afford that. We had an agreement on our board, I remember for years, that nobody would ever use those words. Well, we've tried that before, or we've never done that before. That really locks you in, both sides, to any new idea. Obviously, under the category of arguments and striving and angry words would be a wrong use of the tongue. Look at 18:6. And then let me just give you one more. 18:6, a fool's lips bring strife, and his mouth calls for blows. I kind of like the way that reads. Fool's lips bring strife, his mouth calls for blows. It is really easy for you to turn a pulpit into a hammer and for it to be your place to pull rank on those who can't talk back. Be careful about pouring out your anger on a couple of individuals in the church from a pulpit. Be man enough to face them privately rather than make everybody in the church listen as you vent your spleen. Finally, boasting cliches and empty talk. Just the word verbosity says it, doesn't it? You're in this section. Look at 17:27. He who restrains his words has knowledge. He who has a cool spirit. Isn't that good? He who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. I like this next one. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. Hey. That's good. When you're a rookie, stay quiet. They'll think you're among the wise. If you start to talk, they'll know you're not. But if you keep quiet, you'll be considered wise. When he closes his lips, he's counted prudent. Furthermore, you never learn while you're talking. You learn when you're listening. And on we could go. Let's close with Psalm number 19, verse 14. Psalm 19, verse 14. You've seen it. Maybe it'll mean a little more to you having sat through these two sessions on the tongue. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my rock, my Redeemer. You hear that again? Let the words of my mouth, the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my rock, my redeemer. You're on the edge of finals and then a time of relief in holiday season. That means you'll get up a little closer and more personal with those you're the closest to. Watch your words. Watch to whom you speak and of whom you speak and how and when and where. Let kindness be our guide, especially as we gain knowledge. How beautiful it is to find the gaining of knowledge blended with a spirit of humility and a heart of kindness. How disarmed even our critics are when truth is shared kindly and humbly. As my sister puts it often, just be nice. Just be nice. Be a nice, fundamental evangelical. Be different. Okay? Just be winsome. They won't know what to do with you. They might even listen. They might even change their opinion. Lord, I know you've heard every word, and you know my life better than anyone has ever known it. You know the struggles I have and that we all have. No one can speak on this without being deeply convicted. Now, your answer for this, Lord, we realize, is not that we become a silent classroom or a group of mutes walking around mumbling. You want us to speak. You've told us to open our mouths wide and to speak forth the truth, to give you our praises. We desire to do that. They're singing our songs out there these days, and hearts are unlocked by the beauty of the and the pageantry of this time of year. Help us, our Father, not to slam the door closed with an ugly word in an impatient moment. Find us kind messengers of the good news. I pray this sincerely in Jesus' dear name. And everybody said, amen.